Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga. Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, continuing with The Object of Knowledge on page 293. The object of spiritual knowledge is the Supreme, the Divine, the Infinite and Absolute. This Supreme has its relations to our individual being and its relations to the universe, and it transcends both the soul and the universe. Neither the universe nor the individual are what they seem to be, for the report of them, which our mind and our senses give us, is, so long as they are unenlightened by a faculty of higher supramental and suprasensuous knowledge, a false report, an imperfect construction, an attenuated and erroneous figure. And yet that which the universe and the individual seem to be is still a figure of what they really are, a figure that points beyond itself to the reality behind it. Truth proceeds by a correction of the values our mind and senses give us, and first by the action of a higher intelligence that enlightens and sets right, as far as may be, the conclusions of the ignorant sense mind and limited physical intelligence. That is the method of all human knowledge and science. But beyond it, there is a knowledge, a truth consciousness, that exceeds our intellect and brings us into the true light of which it is a refracted ray. There, the abstract terms of the pure reason and the constructions of the mind disappear, or are converted into concrete soul vision, and the tremendous actuality of spiritual experience. This knowledge can turn away to the absolute eternal and lose vision of the soul and the universe. But it can too see this existence from that eternal. When that is done, we find that the ignorance of the mind and the senses and all the apparent futilities of human life were not a useless excursion of the conscious being, an otiose blunder. Here, they were planned as a rough ground for the self-expression of the soul that comes from the infinite, a material foundation for its self-unfolding and self-possessing in the terms of the universe. It is true that in themselves, they and all that is here have no significance. And to build separate significances for them is to live in an illusion, Maya. But they have a supreme significance in the Supreme, an absolute power in the Absolute. And it is that that assigns to them and refers to that truth their present relative values. This is the all-uniting experience that is the foundation of the deepest integral and most intimate self-knowledge and world-knowledge. In relation to the individual, the Supreme is our own true and highest self, that which ultimately we are in our essence, that of which we are in our manifested nature. A spiritual knowledge, moved to arrive at the true self in us, must reject, as the traditional way of knowledge rejects, all misleading appearances. It must discover that the body is not our self, our foundation of existence. It is a sensible form of the infinite. The experience of matter as the world's soul foundation, and the physical brain and nerves and cells and molecules as the one truth of all things in us, the ponderous, inadequate basis of materialism, is a delusion, a half-view taken for the whole, the dark bottom or shadow of things misconceived as the luminous substance, the effective figure of zero for the integer. The materialistic idea mistakes a creation for the creative power, a means of expression for that which is expressed and expresses. Matter and our physical brain and nerves and body are the field and foundation for one action of a vital force that serves to connect the self with the form of its works and maintains them by its direct dynamis. The material movements are an exterior notation by which the soul represents its perceptions of certain truths of the infinite and makes them effective in the terms of substance. These things are a language, a notation, a hieroglyphic, a system of symbols, not themselves the deepest, truest sense of the things they intimate. Neither is the life our self, the vitality, the energy which plays in the brains, nerves, and body. It is a power, and not the whole power of the infinite. The experience of a life force instrumentalizing matter as the foundation, source, and true sum of all things, the vibrating unsteady basis of vitalism, is a delusion, a half-view taken for the whole, a tide on a near shore misconceived as all the ocean and its waters. The vitalist idea takes something powerful but outward for the essence. Life force is the dynamization of a consciousness which exceeds it. That consciousness is felt and acts, but does not become valid to us in intelligence until we arrive at the higher term of mind, our present summit. Mind is here apparently a creation of life, but it is really the ulterior, not the ultimate, sense of life itself. And what is behind it, and a more conscious formulation of its secret? Mind is an expression not of life, but of that of which life itself is a less luminous expression. And yet mind also, our mentality, our thinking, understanding part, is not ourself, is not that, not the end or the beginning. It is a half-light thrown from the infinite. The experience of mind as the creator of forms and things, and of these forms and things existing in the mind only, the thin, subtle basis of idealism, is also a delusion. A half-view taken for the whole, a pale, refracted light idealized as the burning body of the sun and its splendor. This idealist vision also does not arrive at the essence of being, does not even touch it, but only an inferior mode of nature. Mind is the dubious outer penumbra of a conscious existence which is not limited by mentality, but exceeds it. The method of the traditional way of knowledge, eliminating all these things, arrives at the conception and realization of a pure, conscious existence, self-aware, self-blissful, unconditioned by mind and life and body, and to its ultimate positive experience, that is Atman, the self, the original and essential nature of our existence. Here at last there is something centrally true. But in its haste to arrive at it, this knowledge assumes that there is nothing between the thinking mind and the highest, Buddha Paratastusa, and shutting its eyes in samadhi, tries to rush through all that actually intervenes without even seeing these great and luminous kingdoms of the spirit. Perhaps It arrives at its object, but only to fall asleep in the infinite. Or, if it remains awake, it is in the highest experience of the Supreme into which the self-annulling mind can enter, but not in the Supreme of the Supreme Paratpara. The mind can only be aware of the self in a mentalized spiritual thinness, only of the mind reflected Satchidananda. The highest truth, the integral self-knowledge, is not to be gained by this self-blinded leap into the absolute, but by a patient transit beyond the mind into the truth consciousness where the infinite can be known, felt, seen, experienced in all the fullness of its unending riches. And there we discover this self that we are to be not only a static, tenuous, vacant Atman, but a great dynamic spiritual individual, universal and transcendent. That self and spirit cannot be expressed by the mind's abstract generalizations. All the inspired descriptions of the seers and mystics cannot exhaust its content and its splendors. In relation to the universe, the Supreme is Brahman, the one reality which is not only the spiritual, material, and conscious substance of all the ideas and forces and forms of the universe, but their origin, support, and possessor, the cosmic and supracosmic spirit. All the last terms to which we can reduce the universe, force and matter, name and form, Purusha and Prakriti, are still not entirely that which the universe really is, either in itself or its nature, as all that we are is the play and form, the mental, psychic, vital, and physical expression of a supreme self, unconditioned by mind and life and body. The universe, too, is the play and form and cosmic soul expression and nature expression of a supreme existence which is unconditioned by force and matter, unconditioned by idea and name and form, unconditioned by the fundamental distinction of Purusha and Prakriti. Our supreme self and the supreme existence which has become the universe are one spirit, one self, and one existence. The individual is in nature one expression of the universal being, in spirit, an emanation of the transcendence. For if he finds his self, he finds too that his own true self is not this natural personality, this created individuality, but is a universal being in its relations with others and with nature, and in its upward term, a portion or the living front of a supreme transcendental spirit. This supreme existence is not conditioned by the individual or by the universe. A spiritual knowledge can therefore surpass or even eliminate these two powers of the spirit and arrive at the conception of something utterly transcendent, something that is unnameable and mentally unknowable, a sheer absolute. The traditional way of knowledge eliminates individual and universe. The absolute it seeks after is featureless, indefinable, relationless, not this, not that, niti niti. And yet, we can say of it that it is one, that it is infinite, that it is ineffable bliss, consciousness, existence. Although unknowable to the mind, yet through our individual being and through the names and forms of the universe, we can approach the realization of the Supreme Self that is Brahman. And by the realization of the Self, we come to a certain realization also of this utter absolute, of which our true self is the essential form in our consciousness, svarupa. These are the devices the human mind is compelled to use if it is to form to itself any conception at all of a transcendent and unconditioned absolute. The system of negation is indispensable to it in order to get rid of its own definitions and limited experience. It is obliged to escape through a vague indefinite into the infinite. For it lives in a closed prison of constructions and representations that are necessary for its action, but are not the self-existent truth, either of matter or life or mind or spirit. But if we can once cross beyond the mind's frontier twilight into the vast plain of supramental knowledge, these devices cease to be indispensable. Supermind has quite another, a positive and direct and living experience of the Supreme Infinite. The Absolute is beyond personality and beyond impersonality, and yet it is both the impersonal and the Supreme Person and all persons. The Absolute is beyond the distinction of unity and multiplicity, and yet it is the one and the innumerable many in all the universes. It is beyond all limitation by quality, and yet it is not limited by a qualityless void, but it is too all infinite qualities. It is the individual soul and all souls and none of them. It is the formless Brahman and the universe. It is the cosmic and the supercosmic spirit, the supreme Lord, the supreme self, the supreme Purusha, and supreme Shakti, the ever unborn, who is endlessly born, the infinite, who is innumerably finite, the multitudinous one, the complex simple, the many-sided single, the word of the silence ineffable, the impersonal, omnipresent person, the mystery translucent in highest consciousness to its own spirit, but to a lesser consciousness veiled in its own exceeding light and impenetrable forever. These things are to the dimensional mind irreconcilable opposites. But to the constant vision and experience of the supramental truth consciousness, they are so simply and inevitably the intrinsic nature of each other that even to think of them as contraries is an unimaginable violence. The walls constructed by the measuring and separating intellect have disappeared, and the truth in its simplicity and beauty appears and reduces all to terms of its harmony and unity and light. Dimensions and distinctions remain but as figures for use, not a separative prison for the self-forgetting spirit. The consciousness of the transcendent absolute, with its consequence in individual and universe, is the last, the eternal knowledge. Our minds may deal with it on various lines, may build upon it conflicting philosophies, may limit, modify, overstress, understress sides of the knowledge, deduce from it truth or error. But our intellectual variations and imperfect statements make no difference to the ultimate fact that if we push thought and experience to their end, this is the knowledge in which they terminate. The object of a yoga of spiritual knowledge can be nothing else than this eternal reality, this self, this Brahman, this transcendent that dwells over all and in all and is manifest yet concealed in the individual, manifest yet disguised in the universe. The culmination of the path of knowledge need not necessarily entail extinction of our world existence. For the Supreme, to whom we assimilate ourselves, the Absolute and Transcendent, into whom we enter, has always the complete and ultimate consciousness for which we are seeking, and yet he supports by it his play in the world. Neither are we compelled to believe that our world existence ends because by attaining to knowledge its object or consummation is fulfilled, and therefore there is nothing more for us here afterwards. For what we gain at first with its release, an immeasurable silence and quietude, is only the eternal self-realization by the individual in the essence of his conscious being. Repeating that, in the essence of his conscious being. There will still remain on that foundation, unannulled by the silence, one with the release and freedom, the infinitely proceeding self-fulfillment of Brahman, its dynamic divine manifestation in the individual, and by his presence, example, and action in others, and in the universe at large, the work which the great ones remain to do. Our dynamic self-fulfillment cannot be worked out so long as we remain in the egoistic consciousness, in the mind's candlelit darkness, in the bondage. Our present limited consciousness can only be a field of preparation. It can consummate nothing, for all that it manifests is marred through and through by an ego-ridden ignorance and error. The true and divine self-fulfillment of Brahman in the manifestation is only possible on the foundation of the Brahman consciousness, and therefore through the acceptance of life by the liberated soul, the Jivan Mukta. This is the integral knowledge. For we know that everywhere and in all conditions, all to the eye that sees is one. To a divine experience, all is one block of the divine. It is only the mind which, for the temporary convenience of its own thought and aspiration, seeks to cut an artificial line of rigid division, a fiction of perpetual incompatibility between one aspect and another of the eternal oneness. The liberated knower lives and acts in the world not less than the bound soul and ignorant mind, but more, doing all actions, sarvakrit, only with a true knowledge and a greater conscient power. And by so doing, he does not forfeit the supreme unity, nor fall from the supreme consciousness and the highest knowledge. For the supreme, however hidden now to us, is here in the world no less than he could be in the most utter and ineffable self-extinction, the most intolerant nirvana. End of chapter 1, The Object of Knowledge, in the Yoga of Integral Knowledge, on page 299.